Welcome back to Brains Bible Institute. We're in Module 2B, and this is episode number 3. We're continuing talking about wisdom of Proverbs 8 and how that the New Testament applies this to Christ. Not only that Christ possesses wisdom, but that Christ is, in fact, wisdom in Proverbs chapter 8, the one who was God's assistant in creating all things. Now, what's interesting here is in Luke's account of a statement that Jesus made, it differs from the other Gospels in that it refers to Jesus as the wisdom of God. Now, one of the things that's important to know about this particular instance is that Luke was Paul's traveling companion. And we, in previous I think the first one in this series, we showed Paul's statements in 1 Corinthians chapters 1 and 2 about the wisdom of God being the Son, the one whom they crucified. Had they known this wisdom of God, or this hidden wisdom, as Paul puts it, or secret wisdom, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. So, it's important that the statement that refers to Jesus as the wisdom of God, that it's coming from Luke, because as I said, Luke was Paul's companion and traveling companion. And so we would expect to see Paul's theology in Luke's gospel, at least to some extent. And there are other places where Luke's gospel clearly has a Pauline influence in it as well, right? So the purpose of Luke's gospel was to leave behind a gospel that he starts by saying he was writing a chronological arrangement of the things that Jesus said and did that he got from the eyewitnesses. So he talked to Luke, no doubt, talked to the other apostles, talked to other eyewitnesses. However, the theology in Luke really does come from Paul. Now, let's look at Matthew chapter 23, 34 through 36 at the top of your screen here. Now, the reason I have Matthew's account of this incident is because I want to compare it with Luke's account. All right, so in Matthew 23, this is where Jesus was denouncing the scribes and the Pharisees as hypocrites and so forth. And so he says here in verse 34, he says, "Therefore I send," note I is first person singular, "I send you prophets, sages, and scribes, some of whom you will kill and crucify, some you will flog in your synagogues and pursue from town to town, so that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of the righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you murder between the sanctuary and the altar. I truly tell you, all this will come upon this generation." Now, Luke gives the same account of the same words of Christ, but he tells us that the one speaking here, which Jesus is first person here, is the wisdom of God. Look how Luke translates this. "Therefore also the wisdom of God said," quote, "I will send them prophets and apostles. Some of them they will kill and persecute, so that this generation may be charged with the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be charged against this generation." Again, note, first person here, "I will send." First person here, "I sent." Both cases, it's Jesus speaking. But these words are Luke's words here. These are not Jesus' words. This passage, this statement, is not a quotation from Proverbs or any of the wisdom literature, extra-biblical literature, as some people suppose. It's not a quote of the wisdom of Solomon or any of that wisdom literature of the Jews. This is something Jesus himself is saying that he's going to do, sending prophets and apostles and so forth. However, Luke identifies Jesus, calls Jesus the wisdom of God right here. All right, I hope you see that. The wisdom of God said, and now begins the quote, I will send them. All right, so very important statement by Luke, Paul's companion, referring to Jesus as the wisdom of God. Now let's compare this to two statements from Paul. We looked at these passages in the first episode in this series. However, I want you to compare these. Since also the Judeans demand a sign, the Greeks seek wisdom, yet we proclaim the anointed as having been crucified. To the Judeans, he is a scandal indeed. To the Greeks, an absurdity. But to those, the invited, both Judeans and Greeks, he is the anointed. Note this, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Paul clearly refers to Jesus as the anointed, as these two titles, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Again, this is pointing back to Proverbs 8. And it's because of this that Luke makes this statement. Look at this in chapter 2. Paul writes, we proclaim wisdom among the mature, but not the wisdom of this age or the principal men of this age, those being deposed. But we speak the wisdom of God in a secret, having been concealed, whom God predetermined before the ages for our glory, who none of the principal men of this age have discovered, for if they had discovered, they would not have crucified the Master of glory, or the Lord of glory. Okay, again, we have the wisdom of God, a reference to Christ who was crucified, the wisdom of God who is the anointed one here. And then Luke, see, Paul wrote these letters before Luke wrote his gospel, no doubt. And so Luke's influenced already by Paul's teaching, his oral teaching, and his theology. And so it's because of this Pauline influence on Luke and him listening to Paul's sermons and his teaching, where he spent years in different locations teaching about Christ. Knowing all that, Luke refers to Jesus as the wisdom of God speaking, and then he quotes him as saying that. All right, so it's clear here. Here in the Gospels, you know, a lot of biblical Unitarians like to say that, well, there's nothing about preexistence in the Synoptic Gospels at all. It's only in John, and so they try to discount it there. But this is a clear case of preexistence of the Son, that is referring to the Son of God as wisdom of Proverbs 8, who was in the beginning with God and who was God's protege, who was begotten at the beginning of creation, according to Proverbs 8, 22 through 25. And then farther down up to verse 31, this wisdom of God was with him when he created all things and was beside him as a master craftsman, sort of working under God as God's protege during the creation. All right. All right. Now that's not all we have from the Gospels. Let's look at this. I want to refresh your memory, and I want to point out the similarities. We looked at this in the last one, in episode 2 in this section. We compared Proverbs 8, 29 through 31 with Proverbs 30, verse 4. And I want to draw these parallels again before we get down into Luke's statement below. So I put certain things in blue and in green and in yellow, so that you can see the connection between the two passages. There's absolutely no question that Proverbs 30, verse 4, is identifying wisdom in Proverbs 8, 22 through 31. There's no question about it. And I think you'll be able to see that even more clearly when you look at the things that are color-coded between the two passages, right? So if you remember, let's read this one first. It says, when he set for the sea its boundary, so that the water should not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the world, his earth, and having my delight in the sons of men. Now, Proverbs 34, note the parallels that are color-coded. Who has ascended into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fist? Who has wrapped the waters in his garment? Note here, he set for the sea the boundary. It's the same thing. So that the water should not transgress his command. Now down here, who has established all the ends of the earth? Here, when he marked out the foundations of the earth. Right? There's no question. He's talking about the same creation account, and he's talking about the same person who was with God. Here he says, then I was beside him as a master workman. Here in Proverbs 30, it says, what is his name, that is God, or his son's name? Surely you know. What Solomon is telling us here is he's telling us that wisdom is the son of God in Proverbs 8, 22 through 31. All right? Now, let's look at Luke chapter 3, 21 through 22. This is a reference to Jesus' baptism. Now, the thing I have to point out is the important clause that we're going to get to down here is the same in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John doesn't give us this statement of the Father's voice from heaven, but it is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and it's exactly the same in the Greek in all three instances. All right. So Luke 3, 21 and 22. This is from the LGV. Then it happened during all the people coming to be immersed. This is by John the Baptist. And Jesus also having been immersed and praying, the heaven opened and the holy breath descended upon him in the appearance as if a physical dove. And a voice originated out of heaven saying, and this is the statement that's critical. You are my son, the beloved. I delighted in you. Now, this statement, I delighted in you, is mistranslated in almost all English translations. They say, in whom I delight, present tense. But that's not what the Greek says. The word translated delighted here is a verb. It's in the aorist tense, indicative mood, which indicates it's referring to a past event, a past historical event. It should be translated, I delighted in you, not I delight in you, or I am well pleased in you. It's literally, I was well pleased in you, or I delighted in the past in you. Now, why would God be calling out of heaven and saying, this is my son, the beloved? Well, here's the son in Proverbs 8, who is wisdom. This is my son. I delighted in you, past tense. Why is it always translated, I delight in you, or in you I am well pleased, as though it was a present tense verb? Again, it's wrong. Check your Greek interlinear text. You will see. If you have a means of parsing the text, or if you can actually read the Greek text, you will see that this is a past tense, a simple past tense verb here. I delighted in you. It's a past event in which God delighted in his son. Why is that important? It's important because of Proverbs 8. When God said, or wisdom speaking says, I was beside him as a master workman. And I want you to notice this. I was daily his delight. Now, the importance of the word daily, because this is talking about the creation week, which was 6 days of creating, right? You remember in Genesis 1 that God said, let there be light, and then it says light originated. It doesn't tell us who carried out the commands. Those are all commands. All the command, the let there be commands are all third person imperatives, commands in the Septuagint. Doesn't say who carried them out, but someone is implied to carry them out, right? That who carried them out. It just simply says that thing originated. We had that happening for 6 days during creation week. What wisdom is saying in Proverbs 8 here is, I was working beside him. That is, wisdom was carrying out these commands. I was daily his delight. That is, each day, each of the 6 days of creation, God was delighting in this person who's speaking here, who is called wisdom. Now, what do we see in the Genesis account that indicates God delighting? Well, it's after each day's work. What does it say? God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. God took notice of the craftsmanship of this person called wisdom, and God declared it good. And then at the end of the 6 days, what does it say? God said it is, God saw all that was made, and he said it was very good. Right? So he's praising the work of his protege who was beside him as a master workman. And God was delighting daily. That is, during the 6 days of creation week, God delighted in his protege who is his son right here. All right, you see that? Now, this makes a lot more sense when we consider what God says at Jesus' baptism, when he announces from heaven, you are my son, same as what we see here in Proverbs 30, verse 4, says of wisdom, the beloved, I delighted, past tense, in you. I delighted in you corresponds with I was daily his delight in Proverbs chapter 8. Verse 30, during the creation week. All right. Now, there's one more point I want to make from the statement of God out of heaven when he is identifying his own son as wisdom at his baptism. And that is this word, the beloved, right here. You are my son, the beloved. Now, this is an interesting statement. It's an important statement because this is borrowing from what God said, or actually it was the angel of the Lord, said to Abraham when he commanded Abraham to take his son and offer him up as a burnt offering. But before we look at that, that's in Genesis 22. I want you to notice in Genesis 15:4, when God promised an heir to Abraham, and Abraham said, you know, this servant here, Eliezer, who was born in my house, you know, he's going to be my heir. And God says, no, this shall not be thine heir. I'm reading from the Septuagint, the NET Septuagint. But he that shall come out of thee shall be thine heir. Right? The important thing is the son is not just an adopted son. The son is one who comes out of Abraham's own body, who becomes his heir. And it's because of this, the fact that Abraham's sons, you remember Abraham had Ishmael first, but when God spoke to Abraham to offer up his son, he distinguished Isaac from Ishmael by saying that Isaac was his beloved son. His beloved, the beloved one. And so we see here in Genesis 22:2, he said, take your beloved son. Notice this, my son, the beloved. Take your beloved son, Isaac, whom you love, and offer him up as a burnt offering. This is the Septuagint. The Hebrew version says, take your only son, the beloved. So it distinguishes Isaac from Ishmael even more by rejecting Ishmael of even being included in Abraham's sons when he is talking about the covenant here, right? So take your beloved son, Isaac. God says of Christ, you are my son, the beloved. Or some translations say, you are my beloved son. Same thing. there. All right. The point being, and I want to stress this point before I end this video, is that the statement of the beloved Son, which we see God announcing from heaven, the beloved Son, is intended to make the connection to Isaac being the beloved son, as opposed to Abraham's other son, Ishmael, and him being called the only son. He's even called the only begotten of Abraham in Hebrews chapter 11, using the very same term that we see throughout John's gospel in reference to Christ being the only begotten of the Father there as well. So we see those two terms being used of Christ and of Isaac. The point is, again, that he came forth from Abraham's own bowels in order to be this beloved, this only begotten son. And so by using or making this parallel here and using this language when God is identifying his son at his baptism, he is implying the very same thing that applied to Isaac here, which was his son came forth from his own bowels. He came forth from God's own bowels as wisdom. And that corresponds with what Proverbs 8 says as well. Oh, I don't have it on the screen here, but you may remember from the last lesson that wisdom speaking says that God begot me in verse 24 and 25. All right. So that's it for today. Hope you got something out of that. Maybe you learned something you didn't know. I hope. Anyway, God bless, and I will see you again in the next video.